probably from age 22, whenever I was done chasing the dream or chasing baseball, and to about age 24 or 25, where I basically God tested me big time. He basically he stripped all that from me and was like, hey, we're going to put you through a season of not having that.
What's up, everyone? You're listening to the Do Hard Things podcast by Elite SRS. The purpose of this show is to share stories of hardship and victory as an encouragement for those in the middle of their own hard thing. Because we know hardship produces perseverance, which produces character, which ultimately produces hope. Today's guest is Tyler Christoffel. Tyler is a professional CrossFit athlete and former collegiate baseball player. He talks about his recent engagement to fellow CrossFit athlete Bailey Rail, and then shares his story of losing his identity as an athlete after growing up surrounded by professional and collegiate athletes and coaches. Tyler reminds us of the value found in waiting on the Lord and trusting in His plan over your own. If you enjoy the show, please don't forget to subscribe and leave a review so more people can be encouraged by the stories we share. Now here's the conversation with Tyler Christoffel. All right, we've got Tyler Christoffel on the Do Hard Things podcast and super excited to get to know you and hear your story. Love for people to know more of who you are, and the best way to do that, in my opinion, is the question when people ask you what you do, how do you answer that?
I do CrossFit for a living right now.
How many people can say that?
Not a whole lot. I feel like a lot of people want to do that.
Oh, totally. So you can say it. And what does that mean? Like, to do CrossFit for a living, paint the picture for people.
I feel like this is a popular question. I feel like that can look different from athlete to athlete. For me personally, it's training a majority of the day, 5 to 6 days a week with one rest day. That's like a hard physical structure to it. And then as far as like what everybody wants to know is how CrossFit athletes make money. I feel like that's the most frequently asked question. So I'll just go ahead and throw that one out there for everybody. It's based on endorsements and then earnings through competition finishes.
Percentage of that for the general CrossFit athlete, earnings versus endorsements.
What do you mean by that? Like, what's
it's like, how would you split 50/50? Your income? Is it 50/50, 30/70?
I would say it highly varies, man. I don't think there's like a commonality there.
Yeah. Just depends on the person and how connected they are with a brand or maybe represented they are. Okay. Yep.
I've been very fortunate to be able to work with some really awesome brands too, since starting in and coming into the space. So I'm really blessed in that area.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you ever think that you would be a professional CrossFit athlete?
No, I would say my dream growing up was to be a professional baseball player.
But, okay. And what changed? Like, at what point did you go, all right, this is the path I'm going to take?
Whenever I was 26, I started CrossFit, and I did it just because I wanted to get back into, I started working out again. I had gotten away from working out and being physically active. And we'll talk about a little bit more of that part of my story later. But basically, I got into CrossFit to start working out and training. And it was almost immediately after that, a buddy signed me up unwillingly for a competition, for a partner competition. So I was immediately into the fire. So I was competing within 6 weeks of not even knowing how to do a snatch.
And having not been working out prior to starting?
Yep. So we worked out a little bit, like kind of getting back into the swing of things. And then this one guy is like, hey man, let's try some CrossFit. We were running a baseball training facility. So we had access to, you know, weight equipment and training, just a huge training facility. Yeah. And we trained lots of young baseball players. But it turned from hey, let's work out in the mornings before work, to here we're competing in 6 weeks to here, here's a CrossFit Games team appearance to here's a CrossFit Games individual appearance. And I'm like, 5 years went so fast. I don't even know. It's straight into the fire, man. Like right into it.
Wow. So are you, now that, you know, you're 5 years in, how much longer is something like this on the map for you? I know some guys start really young and then, yep, you know, have a career for 10 sure plus years, but in your head, how long do you think you're going to do it for?
Man, that's a tough question. I feel like that's a tough question for anybody that's in the space, but I do feel like I'll know whenever the time to move on will be. And I say that because with baseball, I also knew, like, the night that I was done, I was like, hey, it's time to be done. I remember we played a doubleheader and our skipper put me in the lineup for the second game and I had a great relationship with the guy. And I was just like, hey, I was like, just let me ride here. I was like, I wanted to watch the other guys finish out the night, and I did it in the dugout, like on my own terms, and it was awesome. I don't regret a second of it. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So you had a lot of peace, it sounds like, with the total transition. Peace.
Yep.
That is not super common, and particularly in sports, but really anything that people are pursuing when they like lay it down, there's like, sure, this gap, right, that people experience and like, what am I doing next? Or who am I? Or all that kind of stuff.
Sure. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit based on the primary question, but
yeah,
I will say, like, there was peace in finishing, but there was some turmoil in the midst of that transition.
Okay. So you had to, there was some work to arrive at peace.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So you started to tell me this right before we were recording, and I saved it for now because I wanted to hear, I got lots of questions, but you just got engaged.
Yep.
And you said 2 weeks ago?
I want to say, yeah, 3 weeks ago. I think it was
3 weeks ago.
Maybe a month ago. I'm telling you, time's going by so fast.
Okay. Very recently, you just got engaged.
Yep.
And of course, I want to know, well, first of all, who is it? Just so people know. And then second, I want to hear the story.
Her name is Bailey Harrell, and she's a CrossFit athlete as well.
Okay.
And the story is, I actually bought the ring whenever we got home from the CrossFit Games.
Okay.
And the company that I, or the store that I bought it from, texted me while we were at the CrossFit Games. And then there's lots of logistics, but just to simplify the story, basically, like, I had a moment where she was in town because she was traveling a little bit between the games. And then we had this trip to Italy. We just got back from like a 9 or 10 day trip from Italy in the middle of September. And it was literally the night before we left. So I got a couple friends, like I told her family, told my family, got a couple friends to help me out with the setup.
Yeah.
Bought the ring like a couple days, maybe within the week before that. And then I was like, hey, let's go to dinner. She can tell the story way better than me. But I was like, hey, we're going to dinner with some friends, like put some clothes on. She's like, she comes downstairs looking like her hair is still wet from her shower. And I'm like, maybe dress it up a little bit more. She's like, wow. So yeah.
But so did she see it coming, or was she surprised? Oh,
I had no idea.
That's a win for sure. Was she like, I'm assuming you guys have been talking about getting married. Was she expecting maybe something like on the Italy trip and you just beat her to it? Or
I think so. Like, I think people were like, oh, maybe he's going to do it in Italy or something like that. And I was like, it's not really my style. I mean, I might've let some people, might've let down 50% of the people down, but those other 50%, they were like, do it before. You got to do it before.
So yeah. Get out of the way. How, on a scale of 1 to 10, how nervous were you when you were getting ready to ask her, like in the moment?
Probably it was one of my most nervous. It was one of my most nervous moments for sure.
Yeah. But do you feel like you did it? Like, went off without a hitch. You just said everything you wanted to say. And
For me, I'm like, I know there's competition nerves exist, like public speaking nerves exist. It's like, I know they're there.
Yeah.
So for me, I try to plan it out how it's going to go. And then I get into this like mental dialogue with myself. I'm like, why are you even planning this out? You know, you're going to get nervous and you're going to start shooting from the hip and like, let's not even play. Like, we're going to know exactly, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
So totally. I was nervous, but did it go according to plan? Probably not, but whatever.
Hey, she said, yeah. So it worked at the end of the day, right?
That's all that mattered.
Yeah. Well, congrats, man. That's super exciting. I'm sure you guys are both excited. Do you have a, You got to ask. Do you guys know when you're getting married?
I think we're trying to get it done next June.
Okay.
June 2023. Yeah, we got a little bit of time.
But like you said, time's flying. So.
Oh, it's crazy.
Cool, man. Well, yeah, that's exciting. And someday we'll get Bailey on here and she can tell the story, like you said, better. But for now, I'm satisfied with your version. So, okay. So for context, a little bit more, where did you grow up? And then you talked about baseball a little bit. And I think this might be a good lead into what you want to talk about, just kind of based on the teasers you've been given. But where'd you grow up? And then how much was sports involved in like your life and all, leading up to, you know, where you are now?
Sure. So growing up, we moved quite a bit over the United States. So I was born in Kentucky, moved to Idaho, moved to Tennessee. So I actually have some family and some roots here in West Tennessee, my mom's side. And then we moved to Louisiana and then to Missouri. And then I went up to Kansas City, Missouri area, Kansas City, Missouri, Kansas City, Kansas area. I played some baseball up there in college. And then I finished my college career in the Springfield, Missouri area. And then I stayed there until I moved to Cookeville last year. So I've been, as far as like growing up, I would say like I've never been in one place more than 5 or 6 years until Missouri was my longest time in a place.
Yeah. And why did you guys move so much?
So my dad is a college football coach.
Oh,
so
okay.
We were wherever he was coaching at the time, that's where we moved, and there wasn't any questions about it. And we packed up the house and packed up the boxes, and we went where we had to go.
And were you guys moving because he was finding so much success and he's just moving up the ladder, not because teams were losing and stuff was to get reshuffled?
There's been both. Yeah. There's been there was a time when we moved from Idaho, he was at Idaho State University in Idaho, and then we moved to Tennessee close to family, and he was at an NAIA school where he was hustling there. I'm pretty sure he was like offensive coordinator at this NAIA school. He was also a golf coach. I mean, he did whatever he had to do. I mean,
yeah,
at the NAIA school. And then from that school, he got a pretty good, like a bigger job. We were at the University of Louisiana Lafayette. So that's why we were down in Lafayette, Louisiana. And then he was at Missouri State University. And that's why I wound up in Missouri.
Yeah. Is he still coaching?
Yep. He's coaching at Nicholls State University now down in Thibodaux, Louisiana.
Yeah, all over the place. That's a lot of transitions. Did you enjoy like moving around and knowing like you understood why? So did you enjoy that change of scenery all the time?
It was, looking back on it now, it was hard and it definitely had like the hardships that came with it, but it introduced me to so many good things in my life. There were so many doors that opened, relationships, friendships, and it always, like, I'll kind of tie this in now, like, it always allowed me to use sports to find friends and groups and to fit in. So I always had whatever sport I could get my hands on. So it really helped me create a relationship with my little brother, who's twice the competitor and athlete that I was or am. But he and I were moving around. He was my best friend, you know, like we would move a new place in a summer. So it was just me and Eric. So, yeah. I mean, I spent countless summers in college football, you know, locker rooms and weight rooms and just at a university with just Eric. And it would just be us running around playing football, playing tennis, getting mad at each other, throwing the ball at each other when one of us lost. Like, so it gave me some really cool opportunities and I'm really grateful for today.
Yeah. So you look at that as like kind of the foundation or the reason you have a strong foundation of a relationship with your brother.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just, I mean, he and I are, we shared common interests and we butted heads and we're both competitive and it's a great relationship for me.
Oh, that's cool. It's not a guarantee that you're close with your siblings. And it sounds like, you know, you actually really enjoy your brother, even if it's, you know, super competitive. So that's pretty awesome.
Sometimes I still want to beat him to this day, but it doesn't mean I don't love him.
Yeah, totally. Okay. So let's talk like, You've kind of led to the question or the purpose of the podcast, and we'll just go straight for it. So, I mean, the main question is, what's the hardest thing in your life that you wouldn't take back? And the reason for that question is there's somebody around us listening to this who is in a hard season right now, and they just need some perspective and some hope. And when people have been through those valleys before, they can offer both of those things. And so this question, like, that's our attempt to get at that story for people so that they can relate to, sure, to offer that for them. So for you, what's the hardest season in your life that you wouldn't take back? Hardest thing?
Whoa. I would say there's been a couple, but the one I want to talk about most would be like my identity as an athlete.
Mm.
And the reason why I really wanted to talk about my background and my relationship with Eric and was because growing up, I'll preface it. My grandfather on my Christopher side was a professional athlete. My uncle's an NFL football coach. My dad's an NCAA football coach. My dad, both of his brothers were all NFL collegiate athletes. All six of the seven Christopher cousins signed college scholarships. The seventh one was probably the best athlete out of all of us, Lindsay. She was like in competitive cheer and gymnastics, dance stuff. Basically what I'm getting at, growing up, I moved around. I found identity in being an athlete very heavily. Like, that allowed me to adapt. And that's, you know, kind of what I measured a lot of things on. And then also from a really young age, I knew that's what I wanted to do. So I hard charged through, you know, grade school, middle school, high school, knowing that I wanted to play a college sport somewhere.
Yep.
And after college, like I said, there was peace in me putting baseball down, but it wasn't, it was definitely a storm. Like, I went through a season probably from age 22, whenever I was done chasing the dream or chasing baseball, and to about age 24 or 25, where God tested me big time. He basically he stripped all that from me and was like, hey, we're going to put you through a season of not having that, and just kind of, and let you do it on your own and try to figure it out on your own. And I did. Like, I wouldn't say I was the greatest human, and I didn't have that identity of being an athlete from that age, you know, 22 to 25. So I got, luckily I never got put in jail or never got in any trouble, you know, nothing big time, but definitely my share of hardships. And he definitely stripped that identity from me and let me know that coming to him for my identity was going to be okay. Like, whether or not I had sport or whatever it was, whatever competitive. Also in that season, I learned that competitive nature in me is okay to have. Like, it's okay to have that drive to want to do something whenever that's like what everything revolves around, right? Your whole life. And then that gets taken away from you. I looked at it as like a bad thing. You know, it was like this bad thing that I got to get rid of, or
yeah.
Not really sure if I'm explaining that well, but I basically made that like the bad guy and was like, man, that's not something you want to do.
Being competitive.
So, yeah. Being competitive and like wanting to be physically active and physically involved, you know, like, I really got away from it. I worked out maybe once every 3 to 4 weeks. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I just had to turn it off. Like, college athlete growing up, like, I would play outside, play in the woods, whatever sport I could get my hands on, man, skateboarding, riding bikes, football, basketball, baseball. Like, yeah, I did it all. So I kind of had to go through that season. That was a tough season for me.
So let's go back to college. It sounds like you were 22. End of your college baseball career was like, it was forced on you in a way, right? Like, as it is for most college athletes at some, like, okay, who am I now? And at what point in your college season did you realize that was coming? And then what was kind of the mental battle of like, okay, no, I want this to be who I am, but the reality was saying, no, it's not who I am anymore. And like, how did you deal with that?
Well, I would say when I was in college, I always thought that my career would go beyond college, right? So I tried to make it. I tried to like I chased a couple tryouts and some independent ball and tried to get in front of a couple scouts, and it just, I think it was at some point I just realized it just wasn't going to happen. I think like maybe I can't remember exactly where. I know I went to like a couple tryouts the summer after my senior year, maybe. And I got tired of getting told like, hey, we can't take you now, or just not quite there, like keep training. Like I got an email from a guy and he was like, we can't take you right now, but I don't want you to stop. Like, what, you know, I just couldn't keep holding on to that, you know, like,
yeah,
you know, it just wasn't,
just a little more. Yeah.
I just wasn't there. And I kind of knew too, like, I would say I had a great senior year, but I always knew like what my holdback would be in baseball. And I never blossomed in that area as far as hitting went. And I just kind of knew like I wouldn't be able to hit at the big league level. So I also like was just face reality. And I was like, all right, time to get a job, do my internship, try to finish school.
So yeah. Yeah.
That's what I did.
So was it senior year that you kind of realized, okay, it's not happening at the big league level. Like you're still pushing and grinding, trying to develop. And then, and I'm asking these questions, like I was a college basketball player. And so I've been in this, like, okay, I got to let go of my identity season. So like, what was the, when you knew it was gone, where did your identity get, where did it go? Like, 'cause you got to put it somewhere, right? So in that moment when it was gone, or you knew it was going to be gone in like 2 months, where did it go?
Okay. So I would say like, it was in that, I never gave it up during that senior year. It was probably after that. And then I went back to school, and I guess I would say I put it in, probably finishing school and in a job. So I worked two jobs, and I also had a girlfriend at the time. I probably put too much of it into that, I would say.
Okay. So it sounds like you're still like, you had the work ethic, you're still like kind of mission oriented and like, what can I do really well now, whether it was school or the jobs, probably.
I was just kind of floating though. Like I didn't really have true purpose, I guess. And like, that's kind of where I'm like, I'm going to circle everything and tie it all up. Is it like, I found so much purpose in that hard charge of like wanting to be a college athlete, wanting to be competitive in the physical realm, and then wanting to be a professional athlete. And then until that all got taken away, and then, you know, the relationship I was in went downhill, and then the jobs I were working at the time, they weren't what I wanted to do for the rest of the time. So it was like, I really had to lean in. And that's whenever I started working at that baseball training facility, and the guy who opened it is a mentor of mine. And that's when I started to lean in on like the, hey, we're going to talk about, we're just going to have like a guy's meeting. Like what we didn't like word it as like a prayer meeting or as like a, you know what I'm saying? It wasn't a Bible study. I guess you can call it that. For me personally, I guess Lord knew I needed it to be disguised as just a couple guys that like working out, talking about Jesus, or being okay to fall in love with Jesus. And that's kind of where like I took interest of like, okay, who's this Jesus guy and what was he all about? Now, granted, I got super blessed with my entire life. I had faith all around me. Like that's probably a different story. Like different.
No, man, that's your story. What are you talking about? It's not a different story.
I basically had it hovering around me my whole life. Like I got so lucky with that, but it wasn't until I was probably 25, 26, somewhere between that 24 to 26 window, a couple of years of getting that athletic identity just taken right out from underneath my feet. Whenever I started to fall in love with Jesus and try to pursue it on my own.
So when you say it was around you, like, was it in your family? Was it just friend groups, coaches? Like, what do you mean?
My grandfather was part of the church, and I always kind of knew that growing up. My grandmother on my mom's side cleaned the church. My dad did an awesome job of opening the doorway for me and Eric. Like he never forced us, but he always led by example. Does that make sense? He opened the door to church for us and introduced us to it and put us around those people. And then was like, this is what you want. Take it. You know what I mean? Like, he's like, never going to force you to do it and jam it down your throat and push you away from it. Like he just introduced us to it and then let Jesus take the wheel, pretty much. Yeah,
that's a song, right?
Yeah, yeah. And then I wound up somehow at a private Catholic high school. And then I finished and graduated from Southwest Baptist University, which was a Baptist college. Yeah. So like it was always like the Lord knew what he was doing, man. He like always had it like in my peripheral. It was like always there, but I just never what I wanted to talk about and relay was like, I always had that athlete identity. So it was never really important to me. And I never really understood the importance of it being like the major goal until he took one of my big pillars away. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Think about it. My family, my life, so much revolves around that. So.
Yeah. And yet at the same time, like what you just said was God, who's supposed to be loving and caring and good, right? Like that's what people say he is, at least in the Christian worldview. And that God took away the thing that you love the most, right?
Yep.
And you're like, sweet. Like that's how you're talking about it, right? Like, thank you, you know? Like you gotta, for people who don't understand how that works, like I think you need to break that down a little bit of like why that was a good thing and why you could still be like okay with, because if you take the analogy, you go like, okay, mom and dad to a kid, it's like, oh, is that your best friend? Not anymore. And they like take you away from that relationship. And the kid's going to be like, you suck. Like, what's like, I love that person. They love me. Why are you doing it? And sure. not like, hey, thank you. That was really nice. Like, so why are you able to sit there and say like, thanks, God?
I guess like just from the joy, experiencing the joy of like where I am now and the gratitude for like, yeah, you, I guess it's all about perspective, right? Like you can look at it as like, man, this thing got taken away and this door got shut. I think an even bigger perspective is what doors are being opened. Like what opportunities are being opened when that door gets shut on his time, you know? Like I look back now, I'm just blown away. Like that door gets shut and then he strips me of that. I find that and all of a sudden here I am with CrossFit. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, you can't make that up. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's not my doing.
No, like you said, CrossFit was not on your radar.
Nope.
So if you enjoy the podcast, please do us a favor and head to your favorite podcast platform and leave us a review. It helps a ton. And there's a reason all the podcasts you listen to ask you to do this. We want to continue to encourage people in the middle of their difficult seasons, and your ratings help boost our podcast visibility and the stories of our guests. Did you pause it and leave a review? If so, thank you. All right. Back to our conversation. So I got a couple more questions related to the story side and even just this part of the conversations. I think first one is, when you started getting invited to this, like, for lack of a better phrase, Bible study.
Sure.
Like, what was your posture towards that? Was it like, I need community and I respect this guy who's inviting me? Like, what allowed you to want to participate in that?
I would say it wasn't just one thing. It was kind of a combination. I really respected this guy's, posture, and I respected, you know, he was married with a couple kids and he has his business. Like he had some success to him that maybe I was attracted to, but I was a fan and fond of him before these things were happening too. So I saw these things blossoming, I guess, in his life. And I wanted that. And I think, it was like a little bit of that, like respect for him and like wanting some of the things and wanting to learn from him, but also like me knowing, like, I need this in my life. Like, I'm tired of doing it on my own. I was tired of trying to figure it all out on my own. I'm like, for lack of a better story, just, I was sick of trying to do things on my own and screwing it up all the time and being confused. And I was just like, Man, this could be way more simple. There's got to be a more simple way. So maybe it's like a little bit of me not being very tough too. Like there's got to be a more simple way for this like life guide, you know, like to guide my life and purpose and all that.
So. Yeah. Yeah. So, you're in this like group of two, three, I don't know how many guys it was, and you're reading the Bible, you're praying, you're encouraging each other. How long was it from when that happened to when you were able to like fully trust that what God had been doing in your life to that point, and then moving forward was best? Because I think regardless of where you are in your life, at some point when God takes something away that we love, like we have to wrestle with it. And it's like, you see it in the Bible, right? You see it in Job, you see it in David, like you see it in all these stories. And so how long did it take you from that time that you really started investing in that community or being invested in to like, okay, God, I trust you. I have the right perspective.
Yep. Probably I would say a couple years of wrestling. So maybe 22 to 24, 25, I was wrestling pretty good with getting stripped. Yeah. And once I started to show interest, probably like 25, 26, it took me probably a year or two, and I was like consistently going to church. I was becoming like, you know, I fall in love with Jesus and becoming more of like the person I wanted to be and somebody I was proud of. And then also my relationship with Bailey was growing. And then probably like 26 to 28, I think is whenever I gave my life to Jesus and then got baptized right around that time.
Okay. So a couple of years.
Like. I was not necessarily skeptical, but I was learning. I didn't want to just jump right into something unknowingly. I was, you know, like I said, I was going to church. I was going to the group. I wouldn't even call it a group study. It was just like, you know, some guys talking about their testimonies or listening to guys' testimonies and life stories and experiences. And then, you know, I was going to church on Sundays. And a big change for me was going to church because I wanted to go listen and learn. Like, I'll be honest, I'm not smart enough to read the Bible, you know, just straight up. Like the parables and the way it's taught, I'm like, hey, look, I got to go to church because this guy's way better at communicating this stuff than I could be, you know. Yeah. That was my thought process too. I'm like, I'm going to go learn from this guy. And he's talking on Sundays and I'm holding on to everything he's saying. And yeah, it was probably like a couple of years before I was like, all right, I'm in. I'm all in.
All right. So this was your answer to the question, right? Like the hardest thing in your life you wouldn't take back was losing your identity. Yeah. And the reason you wouldn't take back is kind of what I think you painted the picture. Like you couldn't make this up, like the story that you have now and the life that you have. So you have this like gratitude for what God took away from you. So when you think about that being your story, like that's a really common thing that God does to people, is like take people's identity and just like yank it. So like, what would you say to somebody who feels like, or is maybe not feels, but is in that season right now? What advice would you have for them?
Oh boy. I didn't prepare for this question.
Perfect. Off the cuff.
Man, I would say lean in on faith. I mean, that's pretty much what I did. I probably did it at a turtle's pace and was a little bit slower than most. Maybe a little later than most. It's kind of story of my life, to be honest. But yeah, I would just say like lean in on that faith, like find that rock, like the sooner the better, you know. That's it, working. I got the opportunity. This is God's amazing, man. The way he paints a picture or story. So I got the opportunity to work with younger athletes in that time. So I'm experiencing going through all this, and like simultaneously I'm getting to talk about my exact experience with guys who are all aspiring to be professional athletes or college baseball players. So I would say like lean in on that faith, and then like let the king take over your story. Like just work hard, like put your head down and work hard. But ultimately like listen and know like what he wants to do, whether it's like blessing you in that season or pruning you in that season. Like just be thankful, lean in on that faith and be thankful for that.
Yeah. And what do you do, like, for somebody who goes, okay, yeah, that sounds good. I want to do that. Like, I want to believe that God is who he says he is. I want to trust him. I want to know like that, you know, sometime in life it's going to turn around, but like, it's not my, that's not right now. And like, how do I, like, are there practical steps I can take? Do I have to will myself into that greater faith? Like, how do I lean in on faith? Right. Like what practically, what does that mean for me to do that?
Man, I would say just be patient. I think, and that, I think that looks different for everybody, right? Like what we do in the waiting. We can be very destructive sometimes, like in those waiting seasons. Some people's waiting seasons are much, I'm going to tie it all into like getting around people, you know, like sharing testimonies and hearing people's testimonies. Like there are testimonies of people who they're in waiting for years, man. You know what I mean? Like whether they're praying for a spouse to go to church, and that doesn't happen until they're 70. There are people who don't do anything financially with their lives till they're 50. And then all of a sudden there's, you know what I mean? So like just hearing people's testimonies and like trying to put yourself around them or learn from them, I guess you could say.
Yeah. Yeah. So, to get the perspective, like what we're trying to offer here, right? Hearing people's stories and understanding how God works.
Yeah. I guess like from me to anyone hearing my perspective or my story on identity is just like, be patient in the waiting because something great is happening. Like just be still.
Just be still. I don't know about you, but being still is so hard.
Man, come, you're telling, you're talking to me about it. Like I want to go, you know, I want to go do stuff and go become what I'm supposed to become and go get it. And then having to sit still is sometimes tough.
Well, sitting still, it feels hard because it feels pointless, right? Like, what am I accomplishing when I'm being still?
Right.
You know, I don't know if you have an answer to that question, but I think I agree with you. Like, I think the value of being still is, for one, it's underrated. Like, it is really important, but I heard it said, you know, like creates in you, like you're like deep waters. Like, you know, the top might be choppy, but in the stillness, right, you can have depth and power. But like for you, in the seasons that you've been still, like what has been the value of that? Maybe in your relationship with the Lord, but even as like identity formation, what's come out of the stillness?
I mean, I would say probably growth every time. Like when you're still and you're just listening, there's always growth to me.
Yeah. And you, would you think that it's more like you grow more? Cause I think society is going to say, no, you grow when you go do stuff. Like when you stretch your limits, when you blah, 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 fill in the blank. Do you think you grow more in the stillness?
I think so. I mean, maybe literally in every, I mean, physically, spiritually, and mentally, like when you just sit and quiet and think, like you solve. Whenever you're physically resting, like when you're sleeping at night, that's whenever you're getting like restorative sleep and building. And that's when your body's repairing itself. You know what I mean? So I think spiritually too, like coming out of some, people say like, yeah, you go out and experience and do things. Sure. But the only way to go to grow is to go out and fail and then come back and like, okay, I failed. So now I'm going to sit still and then grow and then go try again with a different
and repeat. Yeah.
So I would say like, it's like the growth is in like going and getting experiences and failing. Like you learn and you fail, then you learn, then you move on. I don't know. That's pretty complicated, but yeah, I guess you could see, I could see it either way.
I mean, I think it can feel more complicated than it is, right? Which is kind of the cool thing about being still, is it's not very complicated, but the complication is like the quieting of all the other things that allow you to be still, I think, or assigning the right value to being still when you haven't experienced the value of it.
Right.
I don't like, that's really hard to do. Like I'm with you, man. I think when I've been still, which is super rare, I've really valued it. And somehow I still can't get myself back into the mindset to be like, oh yeah, this is really important. I should do this because there's so many things that I'm supposed to be doing. And I mean, you're entering, you know, this new season for CrossFit, now engaged, like time's flying. So right. Like, how do you find ways to be still now?
Man, I don't feel qualified to answer this because I'm like you, man. It's a struggle for me too. Like, it's definitely a discipline. For me, honestly, I have a super high amount of respect for guys that can carve out. They know that that's something that they need to do, and they carve out and do it in a disciplined way. Because, I mean, it's not sometimes – it's super enjoyable to always go and do for us versus, like, carve that time out. I know, like, there's some – I mean, whether you're a early morning riser and you carve out that extra time, or whether it's middle of the day for you, or – however you do it, I think, like, it's probably the best way to do it.
Yeah.
But again, I'm no expert. I'm the king of, like, letting everything build up and then trying to knock down as much as I can, especially the last second, and being like, man, I probably should have made some time for that.
Yeah.
And totally. I always know. A good example for me is, like, I told Bailey, we go on this elk hunt every year.
Yeah, I have didn't you just go? Years.
Yeah, we just got back from Colorado from this hunt. Yeah. And I'm like, I guess maybe this is an example, but a classic, like, extremist example. I'm like, man, I don't really want to go on this trip. Like, there's not a lot desirable about it. We're in the woods, in the middle of nowhere, bad reception, no shower. We're eating peanut butter and jellies every day. But I know, like, there's stillness attached to that. So I go do it because I know, like, I literally become a better person. Journaling, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, totally.
There's some stillness in that, just going to sit in the woods, like in the mountains in Colorado, and spending time in fellowship and having conversations with brothers of mine. Like, there's growth there, and I become a better person there. I'm not going to tell you that I absolutely love doing it. Like, the travel out there, the hiking sucks, the weather sometimes sucks, the sleep sucks, the altitude sucks. But, you know, just know you got to do it.
Yeah, you get to strip away all the distractions and make some time. Yeah, it's fun to talk about this right now because this is a conversation I've been having with my wife. Like, we've got four little kids, and there's not a lot of time in our life.
Sure.
And it's easy for me to, like, fill my time with stuff, but not, like, just be disciplined to think. Like, that's specifically what we've been talking about. Like, do you have time to think? Like, last night she said to me, like, she's like, what are you doing? And I was like, oh, I'm sending some emails. She's like, well, you could be thinking. And it's like, she's doing it in love, but, like, there's so many times that she reminds me, like, you could be doing something better. Like, and, you know, she would say, it's like that stillness to just, like, even just think, you know? And it's so hard for me to, like, know I have things to do and not do them, basically. Mm-hmm. So I'm right there with you, man. I think it's really good, and it's somehow really elusive and hard for me to, like, make myself do it.
It's all balance, right? Knowing what you naturally do and knowing, like, having the discipline, discernment to know, like, what you need to do. It's tough.
Yeah. And then keep doing it. Like, instead of just being like, all right, I did it. Like, and then you're done with it, you know?
Yeah, well, you can do it again tomorrow too.
Yeah, exactly. So the last question I like to ask, and I, you know, we're talking about being still, but and maybe that's the answer, is like finding ways to do that. But the last question I like to ask is, because I think hard seasons and difficult things are a part of life till you die. Like, it's just a part of the human experience. So what is a hard thing that you're in the middle of right now?
Oh boy. Well, I would say nothing super immediate, but this year I experienced some failure in my professional life, like in the CrossFit space. I was one place short of qualifying for the games this year, which is
one place. So can you just, for if people don't know the CrossFit landscape, how many people make it to the CrossFit games?
It's 40 men, 40 women. Yeah, 40.
And how many people are competing?
Oh, man. I mean, let's just go to, like, the regional level and say, like, there's 30. Let's see. At the regional level for me, there was 30 men. And of those 30 men, five of those carry on. And there's, what, 9 regionals? 10 regionals?
Globally.
So, yeah, something like that. I can't remember off.
I don't know how many regionals there are either. But
let's just say, like, out of the United States, there's 120. Or I'm sorry, out of the North American continent, there's 4 regionals. So there's 120 men and only 20 of us go. Right? I don't know what the total signups were. I would ballpark maybe around 150 to 200,000 men signed up. So you go from 200,000 to 120 total of us in North America, and then 20 advance from North America to the CrossFit Games. So I'm a 20 out of 200,000 shot there.
And you missed it by one.
Yeah. And that's, so when talk about like all the blessings that I have around my life, like being able to do this professionally in one of the best places in, you know, in the world to do it. But the last 2 years that's happened. Last year, last year I was in fifth going into day 3, and Brent Fikowski made an amazing comeback on day 3. Granted, I took a major penalty on the online last year. So had I not taken a major penalty, I would have qualified. So I was one place out. I took 6th at my semifinal last year. And then I got placed into the last chance qualifier, which they take the top, they take the 3 men out from each finish. So I think there's like 18 or 20 of us total. They get a bid and they take the top 2. In that last chance qualifier last year, last summer, I took 3rd. So I was one place out in the last chance last year. So one place out in my semifinal due to a penalty, one place out in my last chance qualifier. So then I went to semifinals this year, and I was more prepared than I've ever been. And I had a wonderful weekend. I was like in 4th place all weekend. And the final event, which wasn't even an event I was concerned about really, I experienced like total muscle failure on overhead walking lunges. And I was like the guy on camera failing that everybody didn't want to see the nightmare happen. So basically, like, I guess you want to talk about a hard season. I've been kind of in the waiting. Like, I've qualified for the CrossFit Games before as an individual and on a team, but the last couple of years have both been like really tough for me, is experiencing like right on the edge. And then I faced my ultimate fear. Like, I know my ultimate fear as a competitor is failure, like failing in front of not being competent. And that happened to me in front of everybody. So it wasn't on the CrossFit Games floor, but it was like in a qualification position. I was in position to qualify. I just needed to get a respectable score on this final event, and overhead walking lunges, my body shut down, and basically is a mess. Like,
dude, but that sounds really hard. So how did you, like, what has been your response to that, like, end of the event weekend, like, I don't have a better word, failure, and not being able to like make it to the games? Like, how have you processed through that?
I made a post about it, which really helped me like articulate like the feelings of it all. I'd have to like go back and read the caption of what I said, because I don't really
remember. You don't have it memorized?
No, I didn't memorize. It was a little long for me. I think like the lesson that I took away from it was like, well, there's a couple, obviously. It's like a major failure moment. But like in the stillness, like still understanding that like I'm just reminded that doesn't define me. It doesn't define my season. It doesn't define who I am. It doesn't define my year even. Like, I've had a great year. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I'm engaged to Bailey. I've had some awesome experiences out. Like, basically it was him saying like, hey, we're going to do this again. But this time, instead of like, you know, maybe shutting down and withdrawing from people, let's see how you respond immediately. Everybody's paying attention now, right? Like, everybody's watching. What's your response right now? Like, how are you, how do you bounce back? How quick can it be? How respectfully can you do it? How strong are you? Like, what did you learn from 5 years ago, 7 years ago, whenever?
Yeah.
So that's pretty much what I've tried to focus on.
Yeah, no, that's really good. I think the testimony to people who, you know, wouldn't say that they believe in Jesus or that Jesus is the Lord of their life, when somebody who says that's true can have joy in the middle of a difficult season, like that's the compelling, or when you have peace, when there is no peace, like that's the stuff that people are like sit up and take notice, right? It's not like when you go out and just crush and life is easy and that people right. are like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. That's, it's in the hard stuff.
Right.
So,
yeah, I would say like, you nailed it. Like whenever things are going great, it's great. It's easy. It's whenever mm-hmm. things are really sucky, can you captivate people like with your posture or your, which even the way you treat them, like whenever people know, like when people are a little bit on, I can tell like people were kind of like, they didn't really know where I was at, you know, like
yeah.
we put a lot into this. Like if you know anything about CrossFit athletes, like it's every single day, it's, there's a lot of, I feel like there's a lot of respect if you know, for like what we go through, put ourselves through physically every day, like the training that we go through, and to do that and to come up short like that, you know, people are kind of around me kind of like, you know, not really sure what to say, not really sure yeah. how to talk to me. So like me knowing that it's an opportunity, they're like, they know that it sucks, especially other competitors, you know, who maybe don't have like Jesus as their king, or they don't have that faith. Like, I hope that maybe that inspires somebody, even if it's just yeah. one, you know?
Yeah. No, what, I mean, sucks, but an opportunity in a way, right?
Sure.
To do that. And totally. Unique to a Jesus follower, like the peace and the joy that exists in somebody who says God's in control does not exist in
yep.
people who don't. So never really want to like have that be the way that you get to, you know, encourage people, but it's right. it's what God gave you, right? So
it, totally. And that was exactly like, you want to talk about identity and like, no, okay, your identity as an athlete, you inspire people with your platform, but it never promises us that our platform's because we won. He never right. promises that we're all going to be champions of what we want to do. It's what we mm-hmm. do with, it's what we do with the season. So you say like, what would you tell somebody who, like maybe they're in that waiting season or they're in that season where we're trying to tell them to be patient? It's like, understand, like just because the door gets closed doesn't mean that, like there's a testimony in that too. Like there's mm-hmm. a highlight there. There's people to reach there. I mean, the amount of, I don't know, the feedback that I got just from publicly saying that was probably more than I would have got if I would have qualified, which is wild to me, but
yeah. And yeah. really cool. It's like the upside down kingdom.
Yeah. Right? It's pretty wild.
Yeah. I remember we'll finish on this and then I got one more question for you. There's sure. a story in the Bible where Jesus, he's like, hey, he's in they're in Israel. It's like desert, you know? He's like, hey, if you're thirsty, come to me, I'll give you a drink. And, you know, that's like a waving your hand. Like I failed, I'm in need. I don't have an identity, you know, like me. And so you come to Jesus and you think he's going to say, all right, like, here you go. But instead he says like, I'll turn you into living water. And like in our acknowledgement of our failures and like who met the need, we become like the conduit for other people. Like mm-hmm. it's a multiplication scenario. And it was like, I remember when that like first clicked in my head,
right.
That is awesome. And it's like, I only way I get to participate in that is when I'm like, I failed. I didn't make it. And like,
right.
it's okay. You know? And so
I have a question. Did yeah. you interpret that on your own or did you have somebody help you interpret that? Cause I know I would have needed somebody's help to interpret that.
So I'd probably read that story. You know, I grew up in the church. I probably had read that story 50, 100 times and cool. not had it click. And it was because I was in a season of failure that right. like I saw it differently. Like it was just a gift of the Lord. Like it wasn't my intelligence in any way. I think he was just like, you need to know this. And so yeah, I didn't hear a teacher share it, but I heard it a lot.
I would say it's kind of, this might be a little off topic, but I would say based on what you just said, it's funny how whenever we are in a season of failure and a season of stillness, there's like a quietness, there's a humble, like there's humility to that. And for some reason, when that happens to us, all of a sudden we start hearing things that we need to hear more often. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's like, that's like a reminder too of like, how do we not experience so much failure, like the pain of failure, and still put ourselves in that position of like humility, like a posture of like, man, I needed to hear this message. It's easy. Like whenever you're really struggling, those messages really click, right? But whenever things are really good, I guess those failures and those experiences and loss of identity make you a little more aware and mindful. Like you're able to discern like, hey, maybe I'm moving a little bit too fast and like something's coming, you know what I mean? Like I know something's coming. So how can I posture myself to be prepared the best I can too?
Yeah, no, that's really good. I think in one of the episodes before we were talking about the idea that like in the hard season, all the voices, like they just kind of lose all of their volume. And you get to reset and decide what gets a voice in the middle of your hard season. But I also like what you were saying. It reminded me of in the Old Testament when the Israelites are about to go to the Promised Land, and God's like repeated warning to them is like, hey, when it gets good, when things are good, don't forget about me.
Remember me.
Because in the hard season, it's like it's very clear you are not nailing life. You're not like you need some help. But when things are going really well, it's like, look what I did, you know? And it's easy to just keep moving forward and not have that humble posture and not be like, God, what do I need to learn right now? And it's like, that's just like a really good warning. Hey, don't forget, like, don't forget, it will be good. And don't forget. So, yeah, totally. We could talk about it a long time. but for the sake of people listening, we could probably end that one there. But for people who maybe something you said struck a chord, maybe they're a baseball player and they're trying to figure out their identity, like whatever it is, they want to connect with you, ask you a question. Maybe they just want to like see if you make it next year into the games.
Please.
Like, how can people follow you and connect with you?
Please reach out. I'm primarily on Instagram at tchristofel12 as my handle. But I mean, email me, text me, faith questions, identity questions. Man, that there's a reason why I went through that, so I can help people. So hopefully I can share that just a little bit of my story.
Yeah. Well, thanks for doing that on the podcast. I'll make sure we put in the show notes your Instagram handle so people don't have to try to figure out how to spell it. And that way they can have it easily directed. Yeah, absolutely. So man, Tyler, thanks for hopping on and sharing a little bit of your story. And I think being an encouragement for people, it's fun to talk about it. And I'm always grateful that guests are willing to do it. And thank you. So
Dan, thanks for having me on, man. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for listening to the Do Hard Things podcast by Elite SRS. We hope you are encouraged today and have a newfound hope to persevere. Be sure to subscribe for more great episodes and conversations. And if you ever want to watch an episode, check out our YouTube channel at www.youtube.com/elitesrs. Have a blessed day.